to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program very much. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, June 2nd, 2021. A senior Anglican bishop in Central Equatorial State is accusing the South Sudan Army of killing a priest and other members of a church committee in Lanya County.
The bodies were found in between the village and army barrack, a little bit far from barrack.
And Egypt reacts to Ethiopia's plans to build more dams at the source of the Blue Nile.
Sisi says he discussed the Renaissance Dam situation, which affects the interest of the entire region, and the need for a fair and balanced agreement over filling and operating the dam.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A senior Anglican church leader says armed men wearing the uniform of the South Sudan People's Defense Force killed four people, including a pastor in Central Equatorial State's Lanya County. The spokesman for the South Sudan People's Defense Force says his office is not aware of the incident. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wood reports from Juba.
Archbishop Paul Yugusuk of the Internal Province of Central Equatoria in the Episcopal Church of South Sudan says South Sudan People's Defense Force soldiers stomped into the Gombiri parish of local archdeaconry and dragged out a number of worshippers, including a reverend, during a Sunday service. Archbishop Yugusuk says villagers later discovered four bodies that matched the description of four of the five people who were dragged out of the service. A woman reportedly dragged out by soldiers is still missing, according to Yugusuk. Yugusuk says while the reverend was found with a gunshot wound to the head, the three other victims were shot in various parts of their bodies.
The bodies were found in between the village and army barrack, a little bit far from barrack. It means it shows that these people were actually, when they were arrested, they were not taken to the army barracks. It seems like on the way they cleared them, and nobody knew because people ran away. So when the situation was calm, this is where people now are looking for them.
Yugusuk says the death include a chief, a village leader, and a 10-year-old boy. The archbishop says the incident is the latest in a series of violent attacks on civilians in Lanya County. He accuses government soldiers of burning houses, looting property including goats and chickens, and arresting several civilians. He says six civilians are believed to be in the custody of the army.
As we speak, the youth of the area have deserted and have gone to Uganda for refuge. Some have gone, we don't know where. So there are no youth actually, because the target are youth, used to be killed, and so there are no more youth. Elders are remaining in the village. So the situation is really bad, very bad situation caused by soldiers that we thought they will protect our own people, but they are turned against their own civilians.
Yugusuk says the soldiers who killed the civilians were recently transported from Juba to fight National Salvation Front rebels in Lanya County, but he says the soldiers are the ones committing atrocities.
We are civilians, but now we have been termed to be rebels, and as such, you are found, you are killed. So this is exactly the reason. People are being killed simply because Pojulu is a rebel, because of the presence of National Salvation Front in the greater Lanya.
Reverend Martin Ruben, secretary of the Lanya Diocese of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, also says South Sudan Army officers committed atrocities in Gombiri Parish.
They kill four people from there, and also burn all the houses and taken all the belonging, like goats, sheep, and the cows. And also they came to the side of Nyaporo, Darfe, Kuturja. They burn all the properties and all the houses. all people are inside the lanyard, but there is nothing for them to eat.
Reverend Ruben says traders have run out of essential goods in lanyard because they are afraid to restock due to the rampant insecurity in the area.
In lanyard, it is very worse now. All people are like the youth, they want to kill all the youth, but some of the youth tend to exile in Uganda in the refugees. Because they want to kill all the citizens, start from the thieves, the pastors, and all people within Lanya, they say they are rebels.
Yogusuk says these atrocities have been committed across several parts of Lanya County. He is calling on the government to take immediate action against the perpetrators and restore order in Lanya.
We want these soldiers, those who have committed these atrocities, should be brought to justice. This is immediate, that we want to see this happening. We also want to call upon the release of all those who have been arrested, including Mary, if Mary is alive. So and also to stop also the harassment and the beating, even right as we talk now in Lanya Hospital at the sick bed, people have been still abused right in the hospital.
South Sudan Army spokesperson Major General Lul Roy Kwang says he is yet to comment on the incident. Why Godwill, the acting information minister for Central Equatoria State, tells VOA that state authorities are yet to confirm the incident took place before taking action against the alleged perpetrators.
We have received some allegations of that nature, but we are in the process of verifying on exactly what happened. First, we were told some civilians came to Lanya Center and they alleged that there was an attack on the area, and that led to their displacement. And these allegations have been there, so we're trying to verify through the local authorities.
Efforts to reach Lanya County Commissioner Emmanuel Kemis for comment were unsuccessful. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudo in Juba.
Uganda's Minister for Works and Transport escaped an assassination attempt on Tuesday that claimed the lives of his daughter and driver. The minister, who is also a general in the Uganda People's Defense Forces, was injured. For VOA News, Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
Attackers on motorbikes apparently trailed General Katumba Wamala's official ministry car, then opened fire, killing Katumba's daughter and driver instantly. The general managed to make it out of the car with bullet injuries on his arms. Jacob Olanya is the Speaker of Uganda's Parliament. He says, according to eyewitness accounts, the assailants were repulsed by General Katumba's bodyguard.
So the attackers came from the back and from the front, and they were firing. So he got out and engaged the ones at the back. They ran away and engaged the ones in the front. But the one in the front was very determined to come back and finish whatever he had started. So when he got and engaged with him, now he also ran away. And because the car was already down, he had to hold the general and take him to some place. They entered some, all the, everybody locked their doors, so they had nowhere to hide until he found some ramshackle place. Then they took cover there. Then they came to check whether those attackers were still there. And of course, other people now came to help.
Olanya says that Katumba is out of danger and receiving treatment for his injuries. From his hospital bed, General Katumba Wamala has been recorded in a video making social media rounds, assuring the country and his family that he will get well soon.
God has given me a second chance. I told them, don't worry, I don't have bad injuries, only the arms, but I'll be fine. I'm with the doctors, and the doctors have done everything possible.
Flavia Abiekwaso is the army spokesperson. She says investigations into the shooting have commenced.
The investigators know that, definitely. They'll have the threads. They'll have the links. We already have links. We already have phone calls that were made. Phone calls that can be traced.
The attempted assassination of General Wamala follows a number of other high-profile assassinations by assailants on motorbikes. In 2017, a police spokesperson and his bodyguard were shot dead in a similar manner. Other incidents include the murder of a state prosecutor in 2015, murders of a number of Muslim clerics gunned down in different parts of the country, and the murder of a member of parliament as he approached his home in 2018. In most of those cases, the attackers have not been found. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
The spokesman at Egypt's foreign ministry protested Tuesday after Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed indicated he was planning to build 100 small to medium-sized dams during the coming year. There is still no resolution to the ongoing conflict on filling the Ethiopian Renaissance Dam along the Nile River inside Ethiopian territory. For VOA News, Edward Iranian reports from Cairo.
Egyptian media broadcast an angry statement by Foreign Ministry spokesman Ahmed Hafez criticizing Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's declaration about building 100 new small and medium-sized dams on waterways across his country during the next year. Hafez indicated the plan is a sign of Ethiopia's ill intentions regarding the conflict over filling the Renaissance Dam, which has caused the casus belli with both Egypt and neighboring Sudan. Hafez added that Ethiopia must coordinate such plans with its neighbors before causing them damage. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi visited Djibouti last week, insisting during a press conference he was still hoping to negotiate a diplomatic solution to the conflict with Ethiopia over filling the dam. Sisi says he discussed the Renaissance Dam situation, which affects the interest of the entire region, and the need for a fair and balanced agreement over filling and operating the dam as soon as possible. And Egypt's refusal of the effort of any party to impose its own plan that doesn't meet the interests or rights of countries whose interests are affected. Egyptian political sociologist Said Sadik tells VOA the issue of Ethiopia filling the Renaissance Dam for a second year starting in July has provoked the wrath of the Egyptian public.
Public opinion is very angry and is pushing the government to react to the provocation of Ethiopian politicians and media who are all the time speaking in a very provocative way against the Egyptian people and the Egyptian government.
Sadik went on to say that Egyptian opposition forces based mostly outside the country were calling for protests over what they claimed was the government's mishandling of the crisis. Sadik added that Egyptian officials were perplexed over the unwillingness of influential foreign power brokers like the European Union, the United States, and the African Union to use their influence to reach a diplomatic solution to the crisis. Paul Sullivan, a professor at the U.S. National Defense University in Washington, tells VOA that Ethiopia's construction of the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam is inflaming enough, but building 100 more dams creates greater incitement and is an accelerating aggression. He goes on to stress that Egypt will need to respond, and if Ethiopia wants peace, they are giving indications of just the opposite. If this comes to war, he argues, all will lose, and massively. He says a reasonable settlement would be ideal, but that things seem to be going in the opposite direction. The Egyptian military has been conducting maneuvers with a number of regional countries in recent days, including Sudan, in order to show its readiness in the event a conflict erupts. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, how can you counter misinformation? Find out more about what Somali journalists are doing in preparation for elections. That story is lined up after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
when you are upset, would you rather be alone or with others?
I'd rather be alone, because sometimes being with people demands a lot from someone's self.
When you stress up, there's no need of being alone, because when you are with others, at least they can advise you.
When I'm upset, actually, being alone is not a good thing. So at least I have to associate with my colleague, and I end up releasing that anger from me.
I prefer being alone when I'm upset, yeah, because at least when I'm alone, I regain some humor that I, when at least I go in public, I can talk with someone now, eh? But when I'm still pissed, I can't talk to anyone.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and the Africa Center for Disease Control say there are no drugs approved to fight COVID-19. If you have tested positive, talk to a doctor before taking any medicines. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. The Federation of Somali Journalists has launched a disinformation lab to combat the spread of false information, fake news, hate speech, and propaganda. The group says Somalia is already seeing a huge spike in social media misinformation campaigns ahead of elections expected before the end of July. For VOA News, Mohammed Kahiye reports from Mogadishu.
The country's chronic internal conflict and political instability has made Somalia a fertile ground for the spread of misinformation. The growing number of young Somalis who connect and share news on social media platforms has become a prime target for this tide of fake news. One example is a news headline that said the Somali parliament wanted to ask the prime minister after he objected to a term extension for President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo. It later turned out to be a fake news. To curb the growing challenge for media workers in the country, the Federation of Somali Journalists has launched what it calls a disinformation lab to curb the spread of lies, myths, and distortions ahead of upcoming elections. The lead researcher and director of the lab, Mohamed Abdul Malik, says they will give journalists the necessary skills and knowledge to detect fake news during the polls.
The lab's researchers will support journalists and media workers in Somalia with digital tools, training, and other resources necessary to detect, analyze, and debunk false election-related news in near real-time fashion. In a fragile environment where trust is so low, safeguarding the election process from fake news is as crucial as saving Somalia from descending into civil war again.
Journalists, key bloggers, and social media influencers in Somalia say there is a need for extra caution during the presidential and parliamentary election process.
As journalists, bloggers, and social media influencers, we have an extra responsibility, especially during elections, to inform the public about the crucial process. Thus, we need to be very careful not to run news that are not verified, because it will be irresponsible better late news than fake news.
The Somali government, which has poor record when it comes to press freedom in the country, says it will play its part in reducing fake news during the polls by giving access to journalists in voting centers so they can get first-hand information. Abdulrahim Issa Addo, who is the Director of Media Training and the Minister of Information, says the ministry will also boost awareness campaigns about fake news through the state media and in collaboration with the civil society groups and religious leaders. Meanwhile, Somali political leaders have appealed to the media to perform their duties professionally and responsibly as the Horn of African nation gears up for what promises to be a competitive presidential election. Mohamed Kahiye for VOA News in Mogadishu, Somalia.
From Mogadishu, we move to neighboring Kenya, where Kenya's 58th Madaraka Day celebration on Tuesday was characterized by political drama. Madaraka is celebrated every June 1st to commemorate the day that Kenya achieved internal self-rule. During yesterday's celebration at the Jomo Kenyatta International Stadium in Kisumu, President Uhuru Kenyatta openly criticized the judiciary in what some observers say was an attempt to influence the outcome of the Building Bridges Initiative, also known as BBI, case in Court of Appeal. For VOA News, Atiano Odhiambo reports from Nairobi.
In the presence of newly sworn in and Kenya's first female Chief Justice Martha Koome, President Kenyatta openly criticized the judiciary. He said the judiciary sometimes delivers judgments that are costly to the nation.
From the nullification of a presidential election in 2017 to an attempt to stop the will of the people as expressed through the BBI, the judiciary has indeed tested our constitutional limits. Their decisions must consider the letter of the law, but fundamentally, the spirit of the law must also guide them. I say so with all humility because the spirit of the law is the light that will illuminate the burden of the choices that they make. The judiciary should be guided by the spirit of the law, and political stability will be easily achieved.
The judiciary now finds itself at crossroads with the pending appeal on the BBI case expected to start today, Wednesday. President Kenyatta warned that failure to amend the constitution would doom the economy with an estimated loss of 30% of the national budget every 5 years. He said those opposing the BBI bill are doing so because they cannot imagine a better Kenya for all.
If BBI were to be stopped, who carries the burden of choice? On whose shoulders will ethnic majoritarianism rest? And who will carry the burden of losing 30% of our national budget every 5 years due to the toxic politics that BBI sought to resolve? Everyone knows that the BBI is good. It's good for our country. It is even good for those people who are unhappy with it. But too many Kenyans have embraced fear of change over the need to continuously strive for a more fair, just, peaceful, cohesive, and democratic Kenya. They oppose the bill sometimes not because of its substance, which even its harshest critics concede is good, but because, unlike our founding father, they cannot dare to imagine a better Kenya for all.
It appears President Kenyatta and his deputy William Ruto are no longer reading from the same script when it comes to running the government. Ruto, in his remarks, defended the judiciary, emphasizing the need to respect the independence of institutions. He said a robust legislature, a performing executive, an independent judiciary, and other independent institutions are a firm foundation for the rule of law.
Our forefathers worked hard, toiled, shed blood, so that we can have a democratic nation, a nation anchored not on personalities, but on constitutionalism.
A robust legislature, a performing executive, an independent judiciary, and other independent institutions, so that we can all celebrate the firm foundation of the rule of law, not the rule of men.
President Kenyatta and his new political ally, opposition leader Raila Odinga, unveiled the Building Bridges Initiative as a remedy to 9 key areas that need reform, identified in their 2018 ceasefire following a divisive general election. Atieno Odhiambo, VOA, in Nairobi, Kenya.
Pope Francis has made sweeping changes to Catholic Church law on sexual abuse crimes. The changes are aimed not only at punishing those in the church who commit such crimes, but also in making it harder for church officials to cover up offenses by priests. For VOA News, Sabina Castelfranco reports from Rome.
Pope Francis has made a long-awaited and extensive revision of church law with specific attention to those who commit crimes related to sexual abuse. While abuse of minors was previously an offense under the title Crimes Against Special Obligations, it has now been moved to Offenses Against Human Life, Dignity and Liberty. Monsignor Filippo Iannone, head of the department charged with the project, explained the intention behind this change.
La volontà del legislatore di riaffermare.
The aim, he said, was to reaffirm the gravity of this crime and the attention that must be reserved for the victims. Since his election in 2013, Pope Francis has been speaking out against sexual abuse in the church and implementing changes aimed at bringing those responsible to justice. He has made great efforts at trying to bring more transparency and avoid cover-ups of those involved in abuse. Presenting the changes on Tuesday, Vatican officials said they will go into effect on December the 8th, the day the Church celebrates the Feast of the Immaculate Conception. The changes made to canon law recognize that both minors and adults can be victims of abuse. In addition, both clergy and lay people who hold church positions will have to answer for sexual offenses. While members of the church can be defrocked, lay people will pay for their offense either by losing their jobs or their place in their communities or will receive fines. New crimes have also entered the code, such as grooming minors or vulnerable adults for sexual abuse and possessing child pornography. The changes also make it much more difficult for abusers to benefit from superiors covering up, as this will no longer be tolerated, and those who do not act against offenders will be held responsible and punished for their negligence. Monsignor Iannone said there was the need to strengthen the criminal code because of some existing situations of irregularity in communities, but above all, as he put it, because of recent scandals with disconcerting and very serious episodes of pedophilia. He also said there has been a climate of excessive slack in the interpretation of penal law, where mercy was sometimes put before justice.
La giustizia esige in questi casi che l'ordine violato venga ristabilito.
Monsignor Iannone concluded by saying that justice requires that the order that has been violated be re-established, that victims be eventually compensated, and that offenders be punished and pay for their crimes. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
That's all we prepared for you today. We'd love to hear what you think about this program. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We'll air your comments every Friday. We now leave you with General Paulino with the song Shikilmanga. We have been listening to General Paulino with the song Shikilmanga. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
في مدرسة عريمون انتو يوي نلسة لسة في سنولة بيقول مون انتو يوي
kalam tobo hindu sukar kulu adyudu kalam tobo hindu sukar kulu adyudu bishesh tiya fi mashina.